KFSR presents First Ladies Focus, the personal stories behind people who love Fresno State. Featuring Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro, and KFSR Program Director, Julie Logan, 90.7 KFSR.
Good morning and welcome. I'm Julie Logan, along with my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Julie.
Thanks for joining us this morning. We're excited to have another very special guest with us today. And as always, Mary has the introductions.
Well, aren't we the lucky ones?
We are.
We have another top dog in here.
Oh.
Okay, that's a first. I like it.
Yeah, we haven't had anybody else howl before. So. Okay, Paul gets a special crown for that. We're very fortunate to have the top dog for the Madden Library this year, and that's Mr. Paul Pierce. Thank you for joining us, Paul.
It's such a pleasure to be here.
Paul is a Fresno State alum. He graduated from Fresno State in the 70s. We'll just say in the 70s.
That just barely in the 70s. Yeah. on the front end of the 70s. I'm okay with that.
So that takes you through a lot of fashion decisions. Quite a decade for that, where you earned a bachelor's degree in English. And you grew up here in Fresno, and you said that this has been a place that has sparked your passion for a lifetime of learning. And I think that's pretty incredible because sometimes, you know, you get to a certain point and you think, I got enough.
Yeah, never, never.
But, you know, one of the things when I was reading your bio that stood out as something that we have in common is it said that how you would used to look at the Fresno State catalog and that you'd get excited about all the wonderful classes and how that, you know, really piqued your interest into all these different types of things that you would have the opportunity to choose to study.
Right, right. Some of them having nothing to do with my major or anything
right.
else, but it had to do with life, you know, it had to do with living, so.
And that's a big part of the college experience is taking those classes, taking those chances on things that you've never done before, kind of stretching outside your comfort zone and maybe finding your real passion in
life, right.
you know. What high school did you attend?
I was at McLean. Mm-hmm. I was one of the, I was the second male bagpiper at McLean. So I wore a short, attractive kilt.
You had the knees for it?
I had the knees, and we're not talking about what was under the kilt. We're not talking about that, okay?
How did you come into playing the bagpipes?
I wanted to be in the marching band, and I played the violin in the orchestra, and they don't let violinists play. So
right.
I thought, well, if I was a bagpiper, I could go be in the marching band. So that got me in there. So,
but that's
really
a completely different type of skill set that you
have to foster. Yeah.
So how often did you have classes for that?
Well, we didn't. There was just a group of people who wanted to do it, and it was an after-school thing.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when I was a piper, we weren't the best pipers. They got pretty good later on. But we could make a lot of noise, and I knew the tunes. I can play a tune,
right.
So it was really good fun. And we got to go to some games, and we got to march in parades and those kind of things. So it was great fun.
That's almost like position security because there's not going to be six bagpipe players, right?
Nope.
Band.
So exactly.
You get to be first chair.
We were it, yeah.
That's interesting you said that because at the wrestling match that was held down in San Diego, they had an incredible bagpiper who played the national anthem. He did this great repertoire of songs. But it went much longer than what I'm accustomed to hearing because that takes a lot of control. And I was thinking of how long he had to play to be able to master it at that level. And sometimes, like you said, we made a lot of noise. Sometimes when I hear bagpipes, I'm not sure what song they're playing. But for him,
it was clear. Huh?
It was very clear. And it was really beautiful. And it was a nice surprise to see that instrument because it's not one that you see very often.
No. And it has a real emotional, powerful
nature to it.
You know, and it was another one of those battle instruments. People could hear them over all the clamor on a field. You could hear, you know, that sound and it inspired you. So I don't know. Our football team didn't do all that well. So maybe we weren't that inspiring. Who knows? It's hard to say.
You were good at playing the blues, right?
That was it, blues on the bagpipe.
Blues on the bagpipes. Well, that's a cute story. Thanks for sharing that. So while you were here at Fresno State and you were studying English, did you spend a lot of time in the library or how did you develop this connection specifically to the library?
Well, the library connection started a long time before that. And I remember my mom taking me to this little library on Clinton and Fresno Street in some back of some shopping center to get books, because that's what you do with your kid. And I remember the librarian giving me this book, Wind in the Willows, and it didn't have any pictures on the cover. And I thought, oh, God, what kind of book could that be? And then I opened it up and the world changed, you know.
Wow.
So I've always viewed libraries as an incredible resource. And when we used to go on vacation, one time we were in a little town in Arizona, a little mining town, and with our child who was about four then, three and a half, four. And we went to the local library, which was in the basement of some building. But that's what you do when you get into town. You go to the library and you find out what's there. And they gave us library cards, even though we didn't live there. We looked reliable and we had a four-year-old. What could they say? So, but I have to confess that when I went into the old man library, it had a certain soporific effect. And maybe it just had to do with me studying all night the night before. I'm sure I was studying. That's what I was doing. but I had a lot of very restorative rest in the old library. Now, I don't experience that in the new one. It is exciting to walk in there. It's inspiring. It's literally uplifting. It's tall. It's big. And, you know, if there were a temple on this campus, it's not the stadium and it's not the basketballs. It's that library. It's a temple to learning and what I think it's about, what university's about. I mean, all those parts of it. But so what we're here for is to help people expand. And there's so many ways you can expand in that library, literally and figuratively, including at Starbucks, if you want to expand with some treats while you're drinking your coffee. So, yeah.
Well, I agree with you that if a building could be alive, that's definitely, our library is alive. When you go through there, there are so many different zones where if a student needs to have that quiet time or wants to be isolated, there are those great chairs that kind of put you in a cocoon. Or there's places where they can get together and study in groups. And there's so much light and life and energy. And you walk through where all the computers are just, they're typing away. And I love that, you know, our office is in the library, and that was one of the things I was most excited about, was that how great I get to come to a library every day, because I grew up in Layton, and their library was in this little old house, a little cottage-style house, but it was not the whole house. It was like what used to be the living room of that house was the Layton Library. And we lived out in the country, so it would take us, you know, 10, 15 minutes to get into town. And my mom would take us once a week or once every 2 weeks, because it was only open maybe Tuesdays and Thursdays. And it's part of Fresno County, so you could get anything from the system. But for the kids section, there was just two shelves that compiled the children's section. But I loved going there, and I loved the librarian. It was just so sweet. And just what a book does and what happened to you when you open it up and you just immerse yourself in it can take a child anywhere and can open up all these different possibilities. And in our library, when I'm walking through it and I'm thinking, I love how it has the shelves that can move back and forth. And I just think all of this knowledge is right here and it's free for the taking.
Right. And what I love about being a member of the Friends of Man Library is that we get to bring that resource to people out in the community and bring those people out in the community back into the library.
Yes.
And they hopefully support it more, but also to realize that they have access to all this knowledge and experience and the exhibits and the collections that we have. It's really, you could get lost in there and never come out, and that wouldn't be a bad thing. You know, you'd have a very full life in there.
Indeed. We are fortunate to have some great exhibits. What's one that you've enjoyed recently?
I enjoyed the exhibit about people during the internment when we had that, and the speakers that were with that. And in the Eclipse Room, I was standing around and this very small, older than me quite a bit person came up to me and announced that she had been in the camp. And we had this conversation. And it's an opportunity to have those kind of experiences and exposure to stuff that otherwise would never be seen. So it's so valuable that we have those and we do that for the community. And we look at the issues of diversity and explore that and express that there. That's really important to us, to our family.
While you were here at Fresno State, was there a particular mentor that you felt helped you to navigate the system or guide you towards what you enjoyed doing?
Boy, on several occasions. Yeah, my first advisor was Roger Chittick. He was an English professor. And I remember I took you know, advanced English with him. And the last assignment he gave us was to write a paper on entropy. And I was so, you know, when you're a fish, you don't know you're in the water. I was so entropized that I had no clue. And I, the paper I wrote was one that he asked me if I was going to be an engineer later on or something like that. So that was an insight. I never did finish that paper in time to give it to him before he died. But I'm still working on it, and I'll get it done someday. But also, I had Phil Levine encourage me to have a life before I started writing poetry, because I took his class, and really, that was inspiring. And several of my English professors, Barry Logan, was just really, we have that kind of campus where you can talk to people and have meaningful encounters. And I know faculty now, and they're pretty loaded down with a number of advisees, and yet they still make a point of making connection with students when they need it. And then when I came back as a reentry student to get my industrial arts degree, I ran into Alice Powell, and she was in charge of that. And she helped me navigate that system, and it was quite a treat. So those were a couple of the people that really made a difference for me.
What was it to go from English to industrial design? I see that you're very involved with the Cultural Arts Rotary of Fresno.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that the arts does for you that makes you want to express yourself in different ways?
Well, I'll start out. As an English major, I read, we were reading 12 or 14 books a semester. And I wasn't the best English major because I really loved the stories. I got so involved in the stories that I didn't get so involved in the analysis that was sort of required as an English major. And actually, after I graduated, I don't think I read fiction for several years. I read a lot of how to do it stuff. And in the process of that, and doing some woodworking on a 3-year stint, I lived in Santa Barbara, I thought, I'm going to go back to school and learn how to teach industrial arts to young men, because I thought young men needed good role models, and I could do that in a feminist way. And young men also, you know, a lot of people don't do well in classroom, and they do well hands-on. And and for me, it was music. You know, I was a great student, but music was where I had my connection and was my place. When you're in a 3,000-person, you know, high school campus, you got to have a place, and it was in the orchestra for me, you know. Or when I was here, I was in the orchestra here for a couple of years, too. So it's a connection. So, but yeah, putting your hands on stuff and making stuff and doing things. So that's what brought me back to that. And it was exciting. And I was taking education classes, and then Prop 13 passed, and I read the writing on the wall and realized maybe there was another career path, and I took it. And I don't regret that. But it was really fun. And I really enjoyed all those classes, too.
Do you stay in touch with any of those students that you had during that time?
Once in a while, I ran into, actually, after I left Fresno State, I taught at an alternative school. So there was a thing called the Lab School, and some people still know where that is over here on campus, right? You know, and right as I was ending my college education first time around, they shut the Lab School down. And many of the parents still wanted that experience, so they started this alternative school through the Fresno Free College Foundation, and they have a free university thing. And one of my last classes was developmental psych, and I did an observation at Juvenile Hall and at Millbrook Elementary School. They were two ways of dealing with kids that don't fit. And when I went to Juvenile Hall and I went to Millbrook, I realized I'd rather be on the side that tried to create the solution rather than fix the problem. Solution, problem, you know, it's a different orientation. And so I started volunteering there. And after a while, they felt really guilty and started paying me. And I worked there for 3 years.
And you just kept showing up.
I kept showing up. And that's kind of one of the rules. You know, if you want to go somewhere, keep showing up. And pretty soon you'll find a way. So that led me on a path I hadn't expected. And it was exciting, and watching young people, and I'm still in touch with some of those, because we were very fortunate. It was low student staff ratio. We were 10 to 1, something like that. So we really did know each other. And and I'd see people come from a school system that had ignored them for whatever reasons, whether they were either too smart or not smart enough, or the wrong color or the wrong gender, but and suddenly have an opportunity to thrive and grow, and what some attention can do to people who have potential and it hasn't been realized. So that was really exciting.
What were some of the methods that you felt were most successful in reaching those students and helping them to reach their potential?
It was interesting. For some of them, it was backing away. You know, they'd been in school where they were told where to,
just giving them some space.
Yeah. And I have a great deal of respect for teachers, and I have friends who have 34 young people in a class, and classroom control really is a thing that matters to you. But, and when you're doing that on top of testing, there's really not a lot of time for creative approaches to education, really. And we did, you know, some kids would come in and they were so injured, they wouldn't do anything for 3 or 4 months. They'd just kind of play. And then I'd find them reading college level texts about sharks in the library when we weren't watching, you know.
Yes.
So it was a matter of letting go of what hadn't worked for them in education,
mm-hmm.
and then finding a way to learn. And once they got the learning, then when they went back to school, they did okay because they realized that they had some control, some agency over their learning.
Yes.
So being an agent of that, helping that happen and encouraging that. And then we did mostly experiential stuff. So, you know, I remember my first field trip to the coast, we made, the assignment was figure out a budget, figure out the map, mm-hmm. you know, so suddenly, well, I don't do math, but we need to, they were doing it, you know, and then,
I realized
after going with 9 little kids by myself to the coast that I'd wait a long time before I'd be a parent. So I learned too on that trip.
Well, I like that you had a flexible approach, that if something didn't work, you were willing to try something else, but that you didn't give up.
I think that's it. Yeah. If you keep banging your head against the wall, unless you want to get a sore head and a blade, well, that's not a good solution.
It's not
so find
work.
Another way. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so how did some of those skills of not banging your head against the wall help you to be successful with working with the city of Fresno and working in an environment that is very structured? It mm-hmm. seemed like you went from one extreme to the other.
So I was at the alternative school at Millbrook, and then my honey and I moved to Santa Barbara where they had a real job and that paid real money and benefits and stuff. And uh-huh. then that lasted about a month and we broke up. And so uh-huh. I stayed there and did some work. And then I came back to Fresno temporarily and mm-hmm. ended up working in the Older Americans organization, working with older folks. And again, it was an education activity program mm-hmm. mostly designed to get men to walk in the door. I mean, they'd walk in there and they'd see these women quilting and sewing and they'd turn right
and
around, walk right out.
Thing,
they'd
right.
hang out at the bar down the corner. So I made a sign on the room that I was in that said men's room. And actually that women were welcome there, but it was a place where men
right.
could go. And so I got to kind of relive some experiences with my grandparents that I had missed because they died earlier and I wasn't as conscious of them as I'd like to have been. And in the middle of that, an opportunity came up to work for the city. And so mm-hmm. I went there as a planning illustrator. I'm coloring maps with markers thinking, my God, they pay me real money for this. This is cool. And I never didn't have planning on my education, but I love the idea of having a say and having some input on how the city would grow and how that would impact people. So I studied hard and passed all the tests and became a journeyman planner. Mm-hmm. And then budget hits happened and I got demoted. And then I became the city's training officer. And that's when I went on and got my master's degree in organization development and human resources. So I could do that. And then budget hits with that. So flexibility was a requirement. And
yes.
I think also being useful, because after 8 years as a planner, I was an at-will employee at the city. And so all they had to do was eliminate my budget to get rid of me. And they eliminated my budget 3 more times and still somebody reached out and caught me. So it was, you know, I was grateful for that because I had a little
You're
kid at home to support.
You're not easy to get rid of. Huh?
Exactly. Yeah.
I'll have to talk to patients about that.
Indeed.
Well, speaking of patients, how did the two of you meet?
We were both on the board of Centro La Familia, which uh-huh. is an advocacy mostly for monolingual speaking Spanish people. I'd gotten lured to be on the board because I was president of one of the city bargaining units mm-hmm. and they were trying to get employee deduction. And I started going to these meetings and I really liked the people. But then there was this woman running these meetings and she was just dynamite. And I love a well-run meeting, I have to say. It's a crime to waste people's time. I'm a
right.
meeting facilitator is what I do.
And
this woman knew what she was doing. And then we got to know each other very well as friends yeah. because we had other commitments at the time. And, mm-hmm. and later on, there was sparks and explosions and it still goes on and it's just great. I'm so grateful to be her. I was trying to think of the right word, spouse, partner. I'm her spartner.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Spouse and partner. Yeah.
Joe and I just say teammates, you know?
You know, that's also it. Very good because we are a team. Yeah.
Because you just get up and you both attack the day
mm-hmm.
however you have to, but, you know.
And if one of them drops the ball, the other one picks it up and you're right.
It.
Yeah,
you know
exactly.
You've got the other person there
yes.
for you.
Yeah.
And I love that when I'm at different events to see you and patients there, one of them especially was about homelessness in the Valley
mm-hmm.
and trying to find solutions about homelessness. And one of the things that I really admire about you and hearing the different types of things that you've done is that it doesn't seem that you identify yourself as just one thing. You are open to change, to take on different challenges, and you relay that you've learned from each one.
Mm-hmm.
And you've worked with young people, you've worked with seniors, you've been in structured environments, you've been in open environments,
mm-hmm.
and still you've been able to find a way to thrive and use it all as a growing and a learning experience, which goes right back to what you said in the beginning is the lifetime of learning.
Mm-hmm.
You've adapted that with your career. to me, that's what I take from it, is that it's been one big learning journey for you. And I think that people who've had the opportunity to be able to be a part of it, either if they were someone that you served or a coworker, they're very fortunate to get to be able to have someone that takes that approach to life. And by doing that, you give other people the free license to also take on those challenges.
Yeah.
And I really admire that about you.
You know, there's just no choice. And I really appreciate my mom for this. She would have been a little over 100 right now if she was still with us. And she didn't get to go to school. Economics, you know, didn't allow that. She was a depression kid and stuff. But she never stopped learning and never stopped reading. And she was always reading until at the end when her memory was going, she couldn't read anymore. And then she decided to check out at that point. It was, you know, it was time to go. But really, I had that example of constantly learning. And the downside is, you know, I haven't got the PhD. And at some point I realized I don't need or want the PhD because the kind of teaching I want to do is more applied than academic. And I really want people to take this stuff and use it next week.
Yes.
My make Monday a better day.
Integrated into their life right now.
I think, too, one time when I was doing the resume that doesn't get used, after I listed all 17 different jobs that I'd had, you know, this now if I were young now, that would be seen as a plus. But in my core heart, that was not, you know, you're supposed to get a job and stick with it for a while. But the fact that I did all these different kinds of work with different kinds of people suddenly makes it really much easier to relate to folks and to understand where they're coming from and what motivates them and what drives them and how they can find new ways to express themselves doing whatever it is they're doing.
You're also very involved with the Stone Soup Fresno. Tell us about that.
I'm not now, but I was on the board for about 8 years and early on. And Kathy Garabed was the director when I started there. And most of the boards I've served on are boards where the person who asked was she or he who will not be said no to, right? And Kathy was one of those people when they ask, you go, right? You know? And also, there was some faith-based stuff, and I was a member of the Jewish community, and so the person that had been there before left, so I volunteered. And, you know, that experience of working to create an environment that's safe for refugees. Right now, we're really looking at that.
Yes.
And there are some people that are seeing that as a threat, seeing refugees as a threat. But every single person who's standing on this continent was a refugee, including the first peoples who came from somewhere, you know, but the rest of us arrived from any number of different cultures. And that can be seen as a threat or an enrichment. And in my life, I've really chosen to think of, ooh, wow, this is an enrichment. We had a rule with our child, Darrow, about food. You got to try one bite.
At least once.
One bite, you know. And I was asking Darrow about this just the other day. And right now they're doing nutrition education with little kids in a really at-risk area. And, you know, Darrow said, well, I just used the one bite rule, Dad. And and I didn't force it. And this kid wasn't going to eat those beets. He wasn't going to eat those beets. But he saw the other people eating them. And suddenly he said, hey, these are good. So Darrow was the beet czar.
Yeah.
But so, you know, it's that kind of, you know, enthusiasm about things that we can capture and convey that really helps people to opt for choices that are good for them and stuff, too.
And you told me that Darrow wrote a rap about vegetables.
Darrow did. In fact, yeah, you know, trying to relate to folks. And Darrow's really musical. So they sat down and put this rap together. And I saw it. And, you know, rap is not my okay, but it was good.
From bagpipes to rap. That's
well,
a
it's
stretch.
It's a leap I couldn't make. You know, I got to old time fiddling. That's as far as I got. And klezmer music, but not that. But actually, the kids were asking Darrow for the lyrics and they're singing these songs everywhere. So it's really kind of cool. And they're singing those songs at home and encouraging their family to eat vegetables. So it's one of those ripple effects.
Well,
pretty
it
cool.
sounds like Darrow has adapted your sense and ability to insert joy.
Absolutely. And as a constant reminder, if I forget, for me, too, to, hey, Dad, come on.
So how did you feel when you were notified that you were the top dog this year?
I was kind of stunned. I really was. I thought, well, there's so many people who do so much. And, you know, you know, I don't think I'm humble, but, you know, what do I? And then I started thinking about my commitment, and particularly the library, you know what I mean? And my commitment to library and to learning and to education and to the value of libraries. I had a chance to work with the county library and Laurel doing some pre-work on their strategic plan. And we went to all the little rural libraries, like where you were. And, like, you know, in most of those communities, the library is the community center.
Yes.
And I don't relate to that. And I even had had an experience out at the Champlain Perrin Library, which is,
that's,
you know, I'm sure
library.
Everybody around there is Amazon Prime and they have the helicopter delivering their books. They don't need that library there. But we were in there doing a focus group and this man popped in and I said, so what brings you here? He says, well, I live in Madera. Really? Yeah. My kid isn't going to graduate from school and the libraries aren't open in Madera. So I drive her down here every day so she can work on the computers.
Wow.
So she'll be able to graduate from high school. You know, I think I know it all. And I find out, wow, libraries are really important in the community. They're a link for folks who don't have computers.
Mm-hmm.
That new Betty Rodriguez Library is a knockout, you know, that people can go in and be connected to the world and have a sense of place if they don't have a home.
Yes.
Or if they don't have a house, you know.
Right. Absolutely.
Have a place to live. They can actually have a sense of place. And on campus, I think the library functions a great deal like that. You know, and Peter McDonald, the former dean, used to talk about how many million people come in here every year. And it's stunning. I don't remember numbers, but I remember millions.
Million.
And it's a place to be, you know. So, yeah.
It is. And thank you for joining us today and for sharing part of your story. And thank you for your commitment to literacy and to promoting learning for everybody, no matter where you're from or what your age is or your background. That learning, picking up a book, immersing yourself can take you to another place.
It does. It does. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thanks again to our very special guest, Fresno State 2017 Top Dog for the Madden Library, Mr. Paul Pierce. And of course, my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Thanks for joining us this morning, and please join us again next Sunday morning at 10 for another First Ladies Focus on KFSR. We're on the air at 90.7 FM and streaming worldwide at www.kfsr.org.
KFSR presents First Ladies Focus every Sunday morning at 10. For a complete program schedule, visit kfsr.org.